You're listening to the Bears Barroom Radio Network. This is Bears on Tap, and it's suitable for all audiences.
Heiser downfield, wide open, caught, and what an athletic play into the end zone by EQ. Did you see him somersault off his hand? Wow!
Downfield. Caught by Pringle. Touchdown, Kansas State.
Dunn going to air it out. Single coverage. It is caught by Fountain, I think. He's got a touchdown.
Rodgers for the end zone. For Scott.
Listeners tuning in to hear Jordan Reed school me on some of the wide receiver prospects I've picked as potential day three targets for the Chicago Bears. Jordan is a brilliant scout, a keen analyst, and has a special way of communicating where he breaks down football players and the game of football in a manner that is fascinating for those of us who are diehard fans and those of us who are more casual about the game. So do not miss what lies just ahead. And by now, I hope you have listened to the Akeem Hicks Kyle Long Bears 100 Proof podcast released Wednesday, March 28th. It truly is one of the best podcasts you will ever hear. It's funny and informative as Kyle and Akeem share so much about the game of football, the Chicago Bears, their teammates, and much, much more. On top of all that, these two guys should get into showbiz as a comedy duo because they had us laughing on the floor and they were just fantastic. Now, if you want to hear it, just a word of caution, all of our Bears 100 Proof shows here at the Bears Barroom Radio Network has language and themes that are not suitable for minors. And I'll tell you guys, especially Kyle, he had no problem at all with that format. Now, for those of you who frequent the barroom, you know we affectionately refer to you as barflies. Make sure you stick around after my interview with Jordan Reed at the end of the show. I've got some news for you that I think you'll be interested in hearing. As always, here on Bears on Tap, we get to our feature interview right after my opening thought. Bears general manager Ryan Pace needs to find a wide receiver gem in this draft, and he needs to find him in day three, which is why I invited Jordan Reed here to discuss possible day three targets. In Pace's first year as a GM, he drafted Kevin White with his very first pick. White, a 6'3", 215-pounder with big hands and blazing 4.35 speed, I thought was an excellent pick. But, as we all know, freak injuries have prevented White from even having a chance at realizing his promise. White, it appears, has one more shot with the Bears, and we can only hope and pray that, at the very least, he stays completely healthy and starts to play relatively well. Frankly, it's hard to see him meet the expectations we had for him in 2015. Also that year, Pace signed an undrafted wide receiver from Illinois State that not a lot of people had on their radar. Cameron Meredith was the team's backup quarterback at Illinois State for his first two seasons, and then he moved on to wide receiver for the 2013 and 14 seasons. In that final season, he led the team with 66 receptions for 1,061 yards receiving and 9 touchdowns in 15 games. Pace struck gold with Meredith. In his second season, he began as the team's fifth wideout on their depth chart. By October 9, 2016, Meredith received his first career start in place of White against the Indianapolis Colts, and he caught 9 passes for 130 yards and a touchdown.
Hoyer, end zone. Meredith for the touchdown. Welcome to the spotlight, Cameron Meredith.
Well, he's a big target, as you said earlier. He's 6'3". He runs a great route. It's a double move.
He finished the year with 66 catches for 888 yards and 4 touchdowns. 2017 was going to be his breakout year. we know what happened. He tore the ACL and partially tore the MCL of his left knee. White and Meredith, two men brought here in 2015 by Pace, two men befallen by injury. And now their futures with the Bears are question marks. Meredith might be re-signed by the Bears, but he, like White, offers no guarantee that he can come back from injury and fulfill the promise he once gave us. So here we are now with Allen Robinson signed as the team's number one wide receiver, and he too coming off injury, although not as serious as Meredith's knee injury. Now day three of this 2018 draft is flush with wide receiver prospects who could potentially be a steal. Pace with his two fourth-round picks and one each for the final three rounds, after that needs to find a gem. Let's see if Jordan Reed can help us find them first. Okay, as promised, Jordan Reed is with me. Jordan, it is so nice to talk to you again. You and I started back at the NFC North Barroom. You were such a great contributor there, writing about the Vikings and writing your own column with lots of really cool stuff. Tell our audience quickly what you've been up to.
Yeah, so I've actually transitioned over to actually creating my own website now called climbingthepocket.com, and it's just an upstart website with myself and three of my other friends that I've come to learn or meet over Twitter, and we just decided to start our own thing, and it's been very successful to this point. So if you guys get some time, make sure to check that out. That's climbingthepocket.com.
You know, you write really well, and you've got an eye for talent, so I've been really looking forward to talking to you about some of these college prospects. And so what I thought we would do is we'll kind of look at some potential day three players. And this is... When I posted this on Twitter today, people were saying, wait a minute, that's not a day three player. That's a day one or a day two player. So this is definitely arguable. But, you know, I've selected a few names almost out of a hat, and I thought we'd get your kind of scouting analysis of them. What do you like? What do you don't like, perhaps? And then just kind of go through it. Now, you are an ardent Vikings fan, and we're not going to hold that against you here at Bears Barroom. But if you can kind of look at this through the lens of what the Bears might need, that might be even cooler for us, okay?
Let's do it.
All right, we begin with Jamon Moore, the 6'3", 204-pounder from Mizzou. He did not run well at the combine. After his pro day workout, he was asked what he ran.
I've heard 4.44, 4.45, 4.47. So, I mean, that's what I need to get. I need to get in the 4.4s. That's what I came out here and did, so I'm thankful.
Otherwise, you had a really good combine. What did you feel like you did well there that's put you in a pretty good position here as we head towards draft?
I mean, I ran routes well. I didn't drop any balls. I did good on every position drill, 5.10, 5, L drill, vert, broad. I did good in those. So the only thing I need to clean up was the 40. Came out here and cleaned that up, so. Sky's the limit.
So what do you like about Jamon Moore?
Yeah, he's a guy that's really been getting a lot of steam here lately, really leading up to the combine. Was kind of a disappointment as far as his 40 in the combine. A lot of people were expecting him to run a bit faster than what he ran. I believe he ran around the 4.6 range. A lot of people were expecting him to run a bit faster than that because on his film, he really shows that he can be a vertical threat. He actually led Missouri in receptions and receiving yards last year, so he really was their bell cow or go-to guy. Now, he is a bit of a product of their system, runs a lot of those quick screens and, you know, things of that sort. But he has shown, like I said, to be a vertical threat down the field. He's a bit inconsistent. He has some drop issues. And I think he's a guy that has the potential as a high-end wide receiver number two in a rotation. And that's something really that the Bears really need right now. You have your guy and Allen Robinson, but you know he's coming off the ACL injury. We're not sure if he can be that same guy, but the Bears are banking on that. But if you add a guy like a Jamon Moore into the mix with a Cameron Meredith and even a Taylor Gabriel, I think you would have a really good wide receiver core.
Do you agree with me that he's likely to be a day three pick, or do you think he could sneak into day two?
I think he could sneak into day two just because of the traits that he has shown, and a lot of people probably are going to trust the tape over what they saw from him at the combine. And I mean, he didn't have a bad showing at the combine. It's just people thought he was going to run a bit faster than what he showed. Now, he is still a little bit raw as a receiver overall, but he has a lot of tools in the tool shed, and I think if he gets with the proper wide receiver coach, that can help him be better or concentrate a little bit more and get him out of those drop issues, I think you can have a really high-end wide receiver number two in a rotation.
All right, Jermaine Moore, we'll be keeping an eye on him. Now let's go over to Notre Dame and talk about Equanimeous St. Brown. Now, I got a lot of heat today saying this guy is definitely not a day three guy. He's 6'5", 215, and ran a 4.48 at the combine. You know, he had 58 catches for 9 receiving touchdowns with DeShone Kizer, and then it dropped off dramatically. Clearly, he missed Kizer. With Winbush throwing him the ball, he had 33 catches for 515 yards and only 4 touchdowns. What do you make of St. Brown? Do you think he's a day three possibility? Do you see him a day two? And what's your scouting report on him?
I like St. Brown. Now, if you ask 5 different people about him, you'll probably get 5 different opinions because opinions are really mixed on him. Comes from a really good background. His dad was actually a bodybuilder, a very world-class and highly known bodybuilder, which is very ironic because if you ever look at Equanimeous, he is very thin. Mm-hmm. He's 6'5", 215 pounds, but he's real thin. But the good thing about him is that he's really fast, and he's a guy, I like to say, he can really pick him up and put him down. And he looks like the road runner when he runs because he runs so fast.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a guy that's more of a specialist as opposed to an overall receiver. And what I mean by that is he's a guy that can come in and be that vertical threat. Now, he's not a guy that you're going to ask to be that wide receiver number one, but he's a guy that can fit into a wide receiver core and maybe be that third guy that can be that vertical guy that can stretch the field and take the roof off of a defense, which is very good because the Bears wide receiver core outside of Taylor Gabriel doesn't have that big guy that can stretch the field or extend or blow the roof off of a defense. And Equanimeous St. Brown can definitely provide that for them.
Boy, St. Brown is an intriguing guy. I saw this feature on HBO's Real Sports about his father, John Brown, a world-class bodybuilder, as you mentioned. And the approach that Brown took with his kids, all of them, he has kind of molded to be professional football players. And it really is one way, and not only molded to be football players, but also molded to be stars. And so that's part of the reason John Brown changed all of his kids' last names to St. Brown, because he thought those were cooler names. And the other thing that I wanted to say about his skinny body was it really is strange that he is the son of this famous bodybuilder. And Shane Marsos sent me some videotape of St. Brown working on it. It looked like he didn't even know how to work the weights. He seemed so awkward with that. But he definitely is a kid that can play the game of football and somebody we need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a guy, his production slipped a little bit. Like you said, he did miss DeShone Kizer. And last year, they kind of didn't really push the ball to him a lot. A lot of people are really trying to understand why they didn't, because whenever he touched the ball, really good things happened. Now, last year, they didn't use him a lot on vertical routes. They really tried their best to get it into his hands as quick as possible. So he ran a lot of those quick tunnel screens and a lot of shallow crosses mm-hmm. across the middle of the field. But, man, when he touches the ball, he's a big play waiting.
Okay, next up, DeShon Hamilton, Penn State, 6'1", 205 pounds. He's another guy that I got some heat on about him being a day three player. Most people seem to think that he is going to be drafted day two. He was awarded second-team All-Big Ten honors from coaches after catching 53 passes for 857 yards and 9 touchdowns. I saw him down at the Reese's Senior Bowl, and he played well during practice. Didn't have a good game, but played admirably during practice. What's your scouting report on him?
I'm a big fan of Hamilton, actually. He's a guy that's been a Twitter favorite. Now, he probably is the best overall route runner in this entire class. He's a guy that has a lot of quick twitch abilities. He's very light on his feet, and he can defeat press coverage at the line of scrimmage. It's really impossible to jam him at the line of scrimmage. He has experience in the slot and outside, which is very good for him because he's shown that versatility. Now, on the flip side of that, his biggest deficiency, or the caveat of him right now, is those concentration drops. And that's what you saw down at the Senior Bowl. Everybody was saying, man, he's really explosive. He can run really good routes. But when the ball touches his hands, it just you really don't know what is going to happen. Either he's going to drop it or he's going to make a miraculous catch. So it's kind of hit or miss with him. And I think that's what's really hurting his stock right now is just because of how up and down his hands are.
Yeah, I was down at the Senior Bowl and I talked to him about that. And he did kind of admit that it's a problem, a concentration problem for him, which is something he definitely has to clear up because, you know, you don't catch the ball as a wide receiver. That's quite the problem.
Right, right.
But he is a great kid, smart. He's got the body. He looks like he just could really become an excellent NFL wide receiver, but he's got to clear up those drops. Anything else you want to share with us about Hamilton?
Yeah, I think he's a guy that has very high character as well. He was a very, very highly thought of player by James Franklin, who was Penn State's head coach. He was a team captain. His teammates loved him, and he just spoke glowingly about Deshaun Hamilton, and he thought the world of him. So I think he's a really good player, but he just has to – if he's able to overcome those concentration drops, I think he has a very high ceiling as a big slot guy.
Good. All right, Deion Kane is a guy that's had some issues with drops too. He's the 6'2", 205-pound receiver from Clemson. He ran a 4.43 at the combine, and at his recent pro day, he was asked the question, what will a team get if they draft Deion Kane? And this is what he said.
Somebody that's going to be a team player, somebody, you know, that's used to winning and coming from a culture like Clemson. So I'd definitely be a great asset to people in the locker room and to the team. Just focus on just catching the ball every day and running my routes, getting in and out of my breaks, make sure, you know, I'm efficient in my cuts, and tucking in the ball, because the biggest thing a lot of people say on my drops is really just focusing on catching it, like as I do every day, extra days in the jug machines and working with my quarterback and stuff like that.
58 catches last year. What's your scouting report on Kane?
I actually like Deion Kane, but he does come with a little bit of baggage. I think it was 2016, I believe he was sent home before the national championship game, and the reason why it never really came out. So he does come with a little bit of baggage, and that's really the only known off-the-field issue that he has had at Clemson. Now, when he was there in their wide receiver role, he didn't really live up to those expectations like they sought out for him, and we know Clemson is basically where a lot of highly drafted wide receivers come from. You talk about Mike Williams, Sammy Watkins, and the list goes on and on. So they really have a big tree of wide receivers coming from that school. And Deion Kane was thought out to be that guy, but he just really never lived up to those expectations. Now, his production did slip a little bit. He did miss Deshaun Watson a lot because he averaged a lot more per catch with Deshaun Watson. He was a true deep threat with Watson and Kelly Bryant. His production slipped because, you know, he just didn't have that experience like Deshaun Watson had, and they didn't force feed him as much when Kelly Bryant was there. But as an overall receiver, I think he's a really good route runner, but his hands are a bit inconsistent. He'll make a miraculous catch on one drive, and then he'll come back and he'll drop two easy catches that he should have had. So he's a bit hit or miss, and he's like a lot of other receivers in this draft where their hands just aren't reliable at this point, and that's why they aren't expected to go on day one, or they're a fringe day two or early day three guy.
Now, what, based on your experience and playing football, what can a player make a dramatic leap in terms of improving his hands?
They can. You just have to figure out exactly why that person or that player is dropping those balls. Sometimes it can be something as simple as eyesight, and you'd be surprised at how many guys just don't have very good eyesight. And maybe they need help with something like wearing contacts, or they just need something to help them out. And that's why a lot of people call them concentration drops. And like I said, eyesight could be something that a lot of people don't really talk about with these receivers, or it can be something as simple as just players not looking the ball all the way in and trying to make moves up the field before they secure the catch completely.
Yeah, well, and you know this much better than I do. There's so many challenges for a collegiate football player. You know, you hear stories about these guys, because they're not paid for playing, you know, that they are busy trying to keep their grades up. They sometimes are having a hard time getting a decent meal. You know, they've got to pay a bill or what have you. It can be quite the challenge. And like you said, those concentration catches or drops can be an issue that is related to what they're going through personally.
Yeah, absolutely, and I completely agree with that. And there's just so much background information that goes on with these guys that we don't necessarily really hear about. Mm-hmm. And that's why these combine interviews, these top 30 pre-draft visits are so important, because that's where teams get to go and have these one-on-one sessions with these prospects just to see exactly why they messed up or where they went wrong.
Cool. Now, here's a guy that I really didn't get much information on him, because I don't think he ran at the he chose not to run at the combine or at his pro day, and that was Dante Burnett. What do you know about Burnett that you can share with our audience?
Yeah, he's a really young prospect. Their overall team really was young. Talk about Ronald Jones and Sam Darnold, who are probably the most highly touted recruits coming out of USC this year. And Burnett is a guy that was in that trio as well. Was their top ranked or highly productive receiver this year. More of a slot guy. He's a bit frail, small. He's only, I believe, about 6 foot, probably 175 pounds. I'm not sure exactly what he measured at the combine, but if you watch film on him, you can tell he is a bit frail. But yeah, he's a guy that has really, really reliable hands. He catches everything that's thrown to him. Now, the biggest thing that he struggles with, he predominantly plays in the slot because his stature doesn't allow him to play outside because he is so skinny. He struggles getting jammed at the line of scrimmage, and that's something that will have to be coached to him and taught to him. And that's very coachable as long as he is willing to accept coaching and use those moves that he's being taught to use. So I like Dante Burnett, but he still has some issues that he has to work through. And the biggest one is being able to beat press at the line of scrimmage.
86 catches, 1,114 yards, 9 touchdowns with USC last year, so he can put up some numbers. But yeah, that the 170 pounds is what NFL Network lists him at 6 feet tall. I bet he looks very frail and when he's coming out of the shower there. All right, what about Darren Harrington, the 6'2", 200-pounder from Utah, who had 70 catches, 980 yards last season?
Now, he's intriguing. Now, he started off his career at Oregon, I believe it was, and went out to Utah. He had a productive career there. He's an interesting case. He's not a guy that really likes to be touched a lot. What I mean by that is he really struggles at the line of scrimmage. A lot of defenders are able to beat him up a bit at the line of scrimmage, kind of raw in his routes, and he really needs to be taught the nuances of the game. He doesn't really understand the details and the exact specifics that he needs to do as far as the finer details of the position, beating press at the line of scrimmage. He needs to be taught some moves, sharpening up his routes. Things of that sort are things that need to be taught to him. And like I said, the thing that's really making him slip farther, and he'll probably end up going in the later rounds, is because of all of the red flags that he has had throughout his career.
Definitely a day three pick, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
And potentially an undrafted free agent, you think?
Yeah, I could see that, because he had so many red flags at Oregon, Aldo. I think one of them was, I think he got a DUI at Oregon, and I also think he failed a drug test as well. So he has a lot of red flags, and scouts, they don't want to put their name beside that, because they're not going to be able to trust him because of his checkered past. And I just don't know if teams will be willing to invest a draft prospect in that guy, because he's had so many chances and so many slip-ups.
Right. Well, Mark Helfrich is the new offensive coordinator with the Chicago Bears, so if he can get the load on this young man, if anybody can, it would probably be Mark Helfrich. So we'll keep an eye on that. A guy who has caught my attention is Darius Fountain, 6'1", 210-pounder from, what is it, Northern Iowa?
Yes.
Man, this kid has got some numbers. Ran a 4.46 in his pro day. He started all 11 games in 2016, caught 33 passes for 413 yards, and then made this dramatic leap in terms of production, doubling his catches. Went from, what was it, 5 touchdowns to 12 touchdowns. I've got a little bit of audio about him. where he talks about how his performance at the East-West Shrine Game all of a sudden put him on scouts' map.
How much did the East-West game and your performance there help with this whole thing?
Oh, man, it was a blessing. It was a blessing. You know, I was literally talking to my mom about it the other day. I went, coming out of my senior season, scout told me, man, you went from being a potential rookie mini-camp body to a draft pick, you know, a day three pick. So, you know, it's definitely a blessing, man. You know, I'm just keeping my head down. Obviously, it's up in the air right now. I don't know what's going to go on, but, you know, I'm just waiting to see.
What have you seen and heard about Darius Fountain?
Yeah, so the first time I actually heard of him was during the East-West Shrine game and the week of practices, and you see the clips posted on Twitter, and you're just like, man, who is this guy? I've never heard of him before, you know. The only thing you ever heard from Northern Iowa is Kurt Warner and David Johnson. So that's the only thing you've ever heard from that school. But he's just the next in the line of alumni coming from that school, potential NFL player. So I like what I've seen from him. I've watched a couple games on him, and the first thing you notice about him is just how fast and how quick his routes are. He's extremely quick. He's very explosive getting in and out of his routes. His hands are very reliable, but the one thing you worry about him is that he's only had 1 year of major production, so you're kind of wondering if – was he just a one-year wonder, or is he a guy that can repeat that production, and is he just progressing, or is he just scratching the surface of how good he can be? So I think he's a guy that can succeed in the NFL, but he's probably a guy that's going to go in the later rounds, but it wouldn't surprise me if he does turn out to be a decent NFL player.
Guys like that who are these kind of one-year wonders, and they're from a small school, they really need to impress at the combine and at the pro day, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I was surprised he wasn't invited to the combine because of how well he did at the East-West Shrine game. And that really surprised me.
Yeah, they seem to miss out on like half dozen key invites every year at the folks over at the combine. That's kind of weird.
All right, definitely is.
Another guy that I saw down at the Senior Bowl, and it was brought to my attention, Lauren Cox, talked a lot about Byron Pringle. And Pringle, I don't think he ended up doing much at all in the game itself, but during the week, he was really showing himself to be kind of a special player. He's 6'2", 205 pounds. He ran a 4.46 at the combine. One of the things that he's really got going for himself is that he's also a pretty excellent return man, and he talked about that recently.
I'm so good at it because growing up, we used to play throwback tackle. So basically, you didn't want to get touched and, like, small. Like, we were playing in the alleyway. So it was, like, it's real tight, so you really didn't want nobody to touch you. So, like, when I'm playing kickoff return, when I'm running through, like, small gaps, even though I'm bigger than the average returner, I basically get my body in between the small holes and basically try to get in space and get away from defenders.
You ever play that when you were a kid, Jordan?
Yeah.
I used to, too. But, you know, my problem was that I was the slow, fat kid. So we'd be playing tag football. And so I just would go up and tackle the kid. And that way, these fast guys would just stay away from me. What do you know about Pringle?
His film is very good. I like his film, actually. He's a guy that's, once again, a guy I like to call as a specialist. He's more of that deep threat, as opposed to an overall true receiver that's going to attack all three levels of the field. He specializes in taking the top off the defense and being that vertical guy that can run those go or post routes to open up stuff in the underneath areas. The one negative about him is that he's a bit older. He'll be a 25-year-old rookie. And we all know some teams care about age of rookies and some teams really don't based on their talent. But I think he had a very successful and a very productive career at Kansas State, and that's one of the things that you notice about him. He filled up the stat sheet, and he's a guy that performed really well at the combine, so it will be a bit of a risk to take Pringle, but he's a guy that I think he runs very natural routes. He's very explosive, and if you're looking for a guy to be that deep threat specialist who also provides value on special teams, I think he can be that guy.
24 yards per reception last season on 30 catches, 725 yards, 6 touchdowns. And a little bit of tape that I saw on him, boy, he really goes up and gets that ball, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He has an outstanding catch radius, and that's something that's an added incentive to him, to his value as a deep threat.
All right, let's talk about Michael Gallup from Colorado. He was down at the Senior Bowl, and he had a really great admission when he was asked about, you know, how it went down there and the coaching that he was getting. I thought this was really interesting, and the fact that he kind of volunteered this.
Being here this week, did you feel like you've shown yourself I can do this at a high level, or what's your takeaway been after three practices?
After three practices, it's really just showing me I need to study. That's probably the biggest thing. Just study the game, be a student of the game. I've been out here just, you know, almost I would say going through the motions, and it's not been very good for me, but you know, it's an experience. Everybody has to go through it, so I'm glad I got to come down here and, you know, go through this experience.
Do you allow yourself to?
Now, Jordan, for a guy that's been going through the motions, he's put together a hell of a tape, hasn't he? 100 catches last year, 1,418 yards, 7 touchdowns. The year before that, he had 14 touchdowns in 2016. So this guy, man, if he starts studying, he could really be something, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. This is my guy right here, Aldo. I'm a huge Michael Gallup fan. He's actually my third ranked wide receiver right now in my top five.
So we won't see him in day three then, right?
Oh, no. I have a hard time seeing that. Okay. I'd be shocked if he didn't go on day two, but I think the world of Michael Gallup, he filled the stat sheet at Colorado State. Obviously, the accolades that you listed earlier are exactly what he is. He was really their only option on offense out on the perimeter. And I think he didn't really have really good quarterback play, and he still lit up the stat sheet. Great hands. He's a go-getter. Climbs the ladder all the time to go get the ball. Natural athlete. And he showed that at the combine. I just think the world of Michael Gallup, he runs very violent routes. He's a technician. And if you go back and watch his game against Alabama, he held his own. And that's the game that separated Michael Gallup from a lot of guys in this class to me. I think he's a guy that can step on the field right away and be a contributor in the wide receiver core. Now, the one thing you have to understand about Michael Gallup is that he doesn't have one dominating trait over the other. He just does everything really well. He doesn't have really good top-end speed. He's only a 4.5 guy. I think he ran a 4.51 or 4.52 at the combine. Mm-hmm. But he's a guy that has really good hands, very good agility, very good routes. And there's nothing that's extremely, extremely good, but he just does everything very well. Mm.
How badly do you want to see him wearing purple next year?
I would be very happy about that.
You guys are good enough already. Leave some blare for us. All right, let's talk about Javon Wims. 6'4", 215 pounds, ran a 4.5 at the combine. He's from Georgia, 45 catches, 720 yards, 7 touchdowns last season. What's your scouting report on Wims?
He had a bit of an up-and-down career in his time at Georgia, and I think that kind of was due to quarterback play. Obviously, they had a good quarterback last year in Jake Fromm, and that really was the first year where we got to see him really excel. He did battle some injuries last year. Obviously, he got hurt in a national championship game as well, where he was having a fantastic showing. He's a guy that plays above the rim, and what I mean by that, he has a really good catch radius. He uses his hands, and he always extends his hands from his body. You very rarely see him make those body catches like many other receivers do. He always trusts his hands. And he's a guy that's a lot bigger than what a lot of people really seem to think he is. He's about 6'4", I think 220 pounds. So he's that big body receiver now. He's not very overly sudden, but he's a guy that is very smart. He's a technician. He's really going to beat you with his smarts, and he really runs good routes. Now, he does struggle a little bit getting off the line. He needs to be taught some more moves because he only has one or two moves that he really relies on getting off the jam. And Auburn really exposed that flaw against him. You see him get jammed all the way off out of bounds on one play by Carlton Davis. They really exposed him by having those lack of moves initially off the line of scrimmage. So he needs to be taught those extra moves off the line of scrimmage. But as far as a route runner and a hands catcher, I think he has that.
Do you think that receivers are coming into the NFL a little bit more prepared for playing in the NFL nowadays because they're throwing so much more in college football than they may have in the past? Or do you think that's not the case?
No, I think that exactly is the case. We're seeing these high-powered offenses, and all they're really doing is throwing the ball. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why offensive linemen are so underdeveloped in the NFL now, because we rarely get to see them as run blockers, and all they're doing is pass protecting. But when they're pass protecting, it's only for 2 to 3 seconds, because offenses are running these high-powered, quick-fire offenses. But in turn, it's really preparing these wide receivers to be more prepared entering the NFL, because they're being taught those certain routes that they're asked to run, and they're getting so many reps because teams are running these high-powered offenses. I mean, they're getting 80-plus snaps on offense a game, and we rarely see that at all in an NFL game from the offense.
Interesting. Okay, the last guy on my list here is Jahleel Scott from New Mexico State. 6'5", 215 pounds, ran a decent 4.56 at the combine, had 9 touchdowns last year on 76 receptions. He talked a little bit at the Senior Bowl about the kind of feedback he was getting from people. Let's listen to Jahleel Scott.
What's the kind of feedback you're getting? People want you playing outside, doing jump balls, right?
Yes, sir. Red zone threat, you know, that's what they really want to see. If I could do that here at the Reese Senior Bowl, and I'm pretty sure that they know that, but they just want to make it confirmed, you know. So that's what all the teams are really talking to me about.
What does it mean to get this pro coaching from the Broncos?
It means a lot, because I could pick their brains apart, you know what I'm saying? And then I could learn more routes that I never ran before, you know what I'm saying? So it means a lot to me, you know, and it's an honor at the same time.
Yeah, that Broncos coaching staff down at the Senior Bowl did a really great job with these people. Every player that I talked to, the players were all in agreement that Joseph and his staff down there were just doing a great job. What have you seen and heard about Jahleel Scott?
Yeah, so the first thing you notice about him is that he's big. He has a big frame, 6'5", all of probably 215 to 220 pounds. So now he's not a guy that's overly fast. He wins by boxing out defenders and going up and getting those jump balls. So obviously he's not a guy you're going to ask to consistently go down the field and separate from defenders, but he's a guy that can dominate in those short and intermediate areas where you're throwing those quick routes outside or even on the perimeter or even over the middle, where he can just go up and use his large catch radius and box out those defenders. Now, he's more of a zone coverage beater guy, but if you're asking him to go out and beat man-to-man coverage consistently, he's not going to be able to do that because he just doesn't have that top-end speed to consistently separate from defenders, and he does struggle a little bit at the line of scrimmage getting off press coverage. So I think he's a guy that doesn't have a very high ceiling because he really struggles to separate from defensive backs, but he's a guy, you know, that can be that red zone threat that you throw that jump ball up to if you need that certain type of guy, probably as your third or fourth wide receiver.
Is this the kind of guy who you think would benefit from maybe not playing in his rookie season and being a practice squad player and maybe slowly developing him so that he can be a contributor?
Yeah, I do. I think that redshirt year, essentially what I call it, I think that really would help him because maybe that can help him learn the nuances of the position as far as route running, learning some more moves at the line of scrimmage, and potentially even getting faster while he's on the practice squad, because I think those are the qualities that he really needs in order to improve his game, in order to make the active 53-man roster.
Jahleel Scott, okay, from New Mexico State. Now, that's my list of players. Do you have any guys that you think are potential day three, you know, diamonds in the rough that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, I have one for you, and he's actually one of my favorite receivers in the draft, but he did battle some injuries last year. And his name is Richie James from Middle Tennessee State. He's a smaller guy. Mm-hmm. He, like I said, he battled some injuries last year. He plays predominantly in the slot. He's more of your Jamison Crowder role type of wide receiver, your third wide receiver, who really takes advantage of defenses in the slot, going against those nickel corners and even matched up against linebackers, has an outstanding catch radius. No ball is ever out of his reach. He's an accuracy eraser. That's what I like to call him, despite being on the smaller side. I'm not sure of his exact measurements. I think he measured at about 5'10", about 185 pounds. So he's more on the smaller side, but he has a tremendous amount of heart. He battled some injuries last year, so his stock isn't as high as it was prior to this season. But if he would have stayed healthy this year, I think he would have been a day two guy. But now, since he battled a shoulder separation injury, that's really dropped his stock. But when he's on the field, he's a phenomenal player.
Jordan Reed, I tell you something, your stock is going up. And you know, the way you break down these players and their strengths and weaknesses, your knowledge of them, it makes it really entertaining for the casual fan, for the hardcore fan. You got that covered. And before I let you go, I got to ask you about the Vikings, you know, with the signing of Kirk Cousins. You know, what do you think about your team here?
I kind of was lukewarm about it because I wasn't sure exactly how much money he was going to garner. I thought he was going to get in the 30-plus million dollar range, but now hearing that it's in that 28 million range, I'm pretty excited about it. You know, we've had that, you know, musical chairs at quarterback for the past few years with Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford, and Case Keenum last year. So it feels good now to have that guy settled as your typical franchise quarterback. So I was a little lukewarm about it initially, like I said, but I'm excited now. We have the great surroundings that he needs in order to succeed. And, you know, keeping pace in the NFC North with those great quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers and Matt Stafford. And I even think Trubisky is eventually going to be a good player as well. So just being able to keep pace with those other teams in the NFC North, I thought Cousins was a good sign.
And it really is sad to see what happened with Teddy Bridgewater at Minnesota. I mean, because all signs were pointing to him having a long, productive career as the quarterback there. I met him at camp 2 years ago, the season before he had the injury. And what a super nice guy. What a leader of men. And, you know, for that unfortunate injury and for the Vikings not to re-sign him, you've got to be brokenhearted about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Teddy is a guy I've actually had a chance to develop a personal relationship with over during his injury journey. I actually wrote an article with some quotes that he actually told me, I think it was in August, about his injury and just how he was battling back from that injury. And it's just sad to see because he's a guy I love the pre-draft, and he just so happened to end up on my favorite team. And he was one of my favorite players, actually, to ever play for my team. And just the injury randomly hits him. And, I mean, why couldn't it just be, you know, your regular torn ACL or anything like that? Obviously, we don't want to wish injury on anybody. But
right.
It just so happens to happened to have that he had a catastrophic knee injury. And I just think, out of all people to happen, why him? And, you know, just a very nice human being. Very humble kid, and you just hate it for him, but we wish him nothing but the best. I'm glad he was able to step back on the football field, and I'm very happy that he landed on his feet with the New York Jets.
Last question about the Vikings. Are they headed towards salary cap hell with, I know that the contract with Cousins, we talk about this here at the Bears Barroom a lot, you know, these big fat contracts, you know, they look catastrophic the first year, catastrophic towards the salary cap, but then the salary cap continues to increase year after year, so it's not a problem in the second or third year. But do you have any concerns that with so many Vikings players whose contracts are coming up, you guys may not be able to sign some of the stars of the team?
No, I don't. The Vikings have a really good cap guy. They have a really good cap guy, Rob Brzezinski. That's his name. He does a fantastic job, and he always does a good job of protecting the franchise and looking out for the best interests of the Vikings and not getting them in bad contract situations. So, of course, they have guys like Anthony Barr, Stephon Diggs, Danielle Hunter, and Eric Kendricks coming up. But there's a lot of other guys that they can restructure or even let go in order to retain all of those guys.
Well, you guys are stacked with talent. It's always interesting to see what the Vikings are doing in the offseason, because the more talent they have, the bigger the gap they create with the teams at the bottom of the standings. And unfortunately, my favorite team is there, the Chicago Bears. Jordan, always a pleasure talking to you. Always a pleasure reading what you've got going on. We're going to continue to follow me. Again, it's at Twitter, J-R-E-I-D, Draft Scout. Do you want to let anybody else know about where they can catch up with you?
Yeah, so you can find me also at climbingthepocket.com. And also, I'll be releasing my actual draft board this year on April 9th, and I'll post a link on my page. It's only going to be $5. And what's going to happen is that all the proceeds and earnings are going to go to the Riley Rise for Hunger Foundation here in North Carolina. I'm going to donate all the money that everyone buys from the draft guide, and I'm going to donate it to the Riley Rise for Hunger charity.
Well, my $5 will be in the mail, and I hope our barflies consider doing the same thing. It sounds like a great cause. Thank you what you're doing for your community, Jordan. Thank you what you're doing for us football fans with your analysis and scouting, and thanks for being on Bears on Tap.
Thank you for having me on, Aldo.
All right. Okay, I did run a poll to see which day three player you'd like to see Ryan Pace target, and we did a bracket style. We had 12 players and got whittled down to the top four. The top four were Gallup, Hamilton, Aitman, and St. Brown, and it was St. Brown that got the most votes. So if he's there on day three, that's the player you folks collectively. I think he got like 60% of the vote, so it was pretty overwhelming that the Notre Dame wide receiver is the guy that you guys would like to see Ryan Pace target on day three. So we'll see if he's available. If not, then second was Gallup. Jordan says he's probably not going to be there on day three, but we'll see. And Deshaun Hamilton was third, and Aitman, who I'm pretty sure will be there on day three. That would be the fourth guy to target. All right, so I normally don't do shout-outs on Bears on Tap, but my man, the Tooch, Johnny Santucci, wrote something that I just wanted to share with you guys. He wrote, "I love all of the podcasts on Bears Barroom Radio Network, but man, when Bears on Tap comes on, it's just straight football talk that I really love, especially around draft time. I think I might be a secret BOT junkie," and thank you, Tooch. That's the kind of addiction that we can all live with, right? And now for the special announcement, I want to try to get this in quickly. This has been a phenomenal week at Bears Barroom, just truly sensational. One of the cool things about it is that we've gotten so many barflies volunteering to help us with stuff, like Antonio Contreras volunteering to help us with some of the technical issues, Jason McFly offering to help us with music production, tons of barflies reaching out to writers of the media, broadcasters, football players, current and former, asking them to if they'd like to come on Bears Barroom Radio. So we've just been getting tons and tons of support from all of you guys, and it's really greatly appreciated. That spurned this idea that I have of creating a Super Barflies group. Now, we already have a bunch of Super Barflies that we're in constant contact with and so forth, so they're already honorary members. But this Super Barflies group is sort of like a focus group that I thought we could create. First of all, this is what they would do. Every week or 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, we would have a 30-minute meeting in a Twitter direct message box. And in that meeting, we would get feedback from the Super Barflies on what guests they'd like to see, what kind of a schedule. Should we move Bears Hour Live to a different day, a different time? To see music ideas, all sorts of topics that we would bring up. Not all of them in one meeting, just maybe a topic at a time. The idea is to get your ideas on how to continue to form and mold Bears Barroom Radio and even the website. So these Super Barflies would become members by sending us at Twitter and at our Twitter account at Bears Barroom, sending us a direct message saying, "Hey, I would like to volunteer to be a Super Barfly." Now, we're not probably going to say yes to every Tom, Dick, or Harry that comes in there. If we don't know you, then we're probably going to ask you some questions to vet you just to make sure that you're not, working for the Russian mob or something. So, but I thought it would be very, very cool to have these structured 30-minute meetings on a Twitter direct message box and just ask you guys questions and see where your head's at. What do you think might be a good idea? What might be a bad idea? We did something with SurveyMonkey a while back, and we might do that again. But I want to try to give the Super Barflies idea a chance. So if you're interested in being a part of that, just send me a DM box. I already got a list of super bar flies that you guys are already automatically in, whether you want to or not. But it just send me a DM saying, hey, I want to be a super bar fly, and we'll make it happen somehow, some way, and see if this works. So I thought it might be kind of cool. All right. That is Bears on Tap. Remember, if you drink, please don't drive, and always bear down.